Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Handy Paint Products. They're those red plastic cups or roller trays you've probably seen in the paint aisle. We've been using them for years and they make things so much easier. Our personal favorites are the Handy Paint Cup and the Handy Paint Tray, and you can check out the whole line wherever you buy paint. I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're sharing some early setbacks that nearly steered our lives in a totally different direction. No houses, no blog, even no marriage. Plus why we finally gave up trying to update an area of our home and just called in the pros.
I feel like it's almost March, which means it's almost spring, which means it's almost summer.
Keep going. Nope, then it's going to be cold again.
Oh gosh, too far.
Too far.
Well, because it is starting to get nice out, like we've had a decent stretch here of some warmish days.
There's like birds chirping in the morning. My daffodils are popping out of the ground.
In Cape Charles, there were like cherry blossoms starting to bloom, like getting red on the buds. It was exciting. But anyways, speaking of landscaping.
Segue?
Yep. If you guys caught on Instagram a couple weeks ago, I think Sherry actually gave a preview of some big changes in landscaping in our house.
Hardly anyone noticed.
Oh, really? Well, never mind.
I just panned around the backyard. I forget what I was showing, but like four people were like, oh, you planted some bushes. And I was like, yes, we did.
Actually, we didn't plant any bushes.
Yeah, we planted some bushes in the front.
Yes. Last fall, we took the plunge and had our backyard landscaped, like professionally.
Right. And why would two cheap...
That is a loud bird. I told you, springtime is right here, guys.
Why would two... Seriously.
I might have to scare him away. Go. Shoo.
Oh, but it's so
right here.
Happy.
He feels the spring weather. Okay. It was charming. Now we've got things to do.
He's gone, all his friends.
Oh, no. There he goes.
Nature took care of it. Okay. Where I was going with that was, why would two cheap individuals like us pay for landscaping? Because it's certainly not something we've ever done in 12 years of owning a house. 11 years of owning a house?
11. Well, almost 12.
But we're bad at it.
Yeah.
And so the way I would describe it is, we're choosing our strength and we're knowing our weakness.
We've been here almost 5 years. And from day one, one of our goals has been to get more privacy in the backyard. Because we back up to several houses and there's woods back there. But especially like right now in the wintertime when the leaves are down, we can see so many other houses. And it's not like we need like secret covert area in our backyard to do private things. It's just like, it's nice to feel like you have a little bit of a buffer from the people right next to you.
Right.
So anyways, long story short, we've been trying to get that privacy back here and just a little bit of screening between us and the neighbor. And I think when we first moved in, we bought some big trees. Like I think we sunk like $600 into a bunch of big shrubs and trees that then promptly died.
And I kept hoping they'd come back to life. No dice, guys. Years later, they're still just sticks in the ground. My $600 worth of sticks in the backyard.
And so fast forward to a couple years ago, we actually even talked about on one of the early episodes of this podcast, episode 5, I looked. We talked about how our next attempt to sort of get the landscaping taken care of was we hired a landscape planner to just do a plan for us. It was $300. She was not planting anything, not buying anything. She was just telling us what to put where. And so we got that plan and we didn't really do anything.
Well, we knew that plan necessitated us putting in an irrigation system.
Oh, yeah.
And a placement of a shed was sort of dictated by the plan. So we got the ball rolling in those areas.
Yeah, I guess we didn't do nothing. It sort of kicked us into gear to get those things taken care of. I think we also paved the driveway because of that plan. So it wasn't useless, but we didn't actually plant anything. And in the time after we got that plan, before we could actually start planting, some big changes happened in the backyard that kind of negated that plan. One was that we took the deck down. That was our fault.
I take full responsibility and I love it so much better without.
Yeah,
everyone who comes over is like, this is so much better.
So obviously the things we'd planned around the deck didn't make sense anymore. And then also we had a really big tree die in the backyard that really anchored a spot back there. And so it changed that whole scenario.
Yeah, it wouldn't have even made sense without that tree, because that tree was a really sort of important anchor point of the landscape plan. And so we tried to say to ourselves like, oh, it stinks that we bought $600 worth of bushes and then they didn't work. And then we spent $300 on this landscape plan, but then that tree died. And
it just felt like we were not getting anywhere on the backyard. And, you know, something like landscaping is something where time is a big benefit to you. Like if we had gotten a good start right when we moved in, we'd have much more mature full plantings back here now 5 years later.
Oh, we should have done that. I wish we had done that first, because it would be all grown in. Although we wouldn't have known that tree would have died and maybe would have planted stuff in a weird spot. And I think we got to this point where we were like, we're hitting our heads against a wall. And that's why I go back to when I said, just know your strengths. Like, we were not getting this on our own.
No, it was time to give up. and just outsource it to someone who knew what they were doing. So we had a neighbor who recommended a local nursery who did their yard, because one of the things that was very exciting about that is that they warranty everything. So if it dies, they will come back and replant it with no charge to you.
And they warranty it not for 1 year, but for 2 whole years. And she said, sometimes I go outside and I notice, oh, they replaced that bush. Like, I didn't even call them or tell them, but one of the landscapers actually lives in our neighborhood and drove by and noticed one thing was looking droopy and like replaced it. So I thought, oh my gosh, what a service. It's like plant concierge. Like, darling, this tree's looking a little droopy, and you ring a bell and they come fix it.
Well, and for us, it was just really worth paying the extra cost to have someone dig in the plants we buy so that we would have this guarantee that they would be taken care of and watched for a couple years. Like, if one dies, we can call them and they will come replace it anytime within that 2 year window. And then that 2 year clock starts again on that plant. So like, we're almost guaranteed that all these plants will get established.
Exactly. And if any have issues and they have to change them out because the sun isn't what they thought, like, all of that is something that they take on. So we can take that monkey off of our back, yes, and put it on theirs. And they're experts, so they're fine with the monkey.
They love that monkey. The funny thing is that we didn't get this done until November, like the very end of the planting season here in Richmond, because we just got kind of late on their calendar. And so while all of the evergreens look nice and stuff, like we've got some bushes and shrubs and some taller trees that are nice and green through the winter, but we also got some like ornamental trees, like a maple and a ginkgo, and they've just been sticks the whole time. Like, we have not seen a single leaf on those the entire time they've been here.
Yeah, we keep joking because we got basically 3 decorative trees. The rest are for screening and filling stuff in and fullness, but we did get these beautiful trees. And since they're not evergreen, what's the deciduous? Is that the other term?
I believe so.
Right now, they're really boring looking.
Yeah, I was like, I would love to put pictures of this up, but it doesn't really look so great right now.
I think we took some pictures in the fall right after they went in.
Okay, maybe we'll try to dig those up. There's still sticks in that picture, though.
Yeah, there's sticks. But we'll put them in the show notes so you can kind of see what we did. But we essentially created sort of like a perimeter planting around the whole back. And we actually love the front yard landscaping, which we were able to get together by
on
ourselves.
Our own. Somehow, by some miracle, we pulled that off without anyone's help.
Yeah, I think it's because that's full sun. But the backyard is really challenging because it has a lot of shade. It has some moss in some areas. It wasn't getting watered before the irrigation went in, so there was a lot more of a challenge in the back.
And actually, speaking of irrigation, I have the fun job of extending the irrigation system this spring to cover some of those bushes because it doesn't get all of them. So
I know.
I get to revisit my favorite project ever.
John's thrilled, as you can tell.
Actually, one thing though I am excited about that we did in the process of doing the bushes around the back is we had them dump some pea gravel where our deck had been, because they were bringing like a truck full of mulch anyways. We were like, hey, can you just toss some gravel on there? You know, there's going to be a patio here eventually. They can use it as sort of the substrate for the patio. But it was all dirt where the deck was, and we didn't want to have basically a mud pit all winter, because that's like right down the steps where the kids go down and the dog goes down. So we didn't want people tracking mud up until we got the patio done later this year. And so we had that dumped, and it's been really nice because it started to give us a sense of what the patio might look like. We're kind of able to think about the shape and the placement of it.
Exactly. I think seeing the pea gravel helped us realize it's a little too narrow, and now we know to extend it. And you know, you don't want to make that mistake on like stone where it's installed and you're like, whoops, that's too narrow. Like, it's much easier to figure it out at this point. So, and I think it was like $70. We were like, can you add some pea gravel? They were like, sure. And they spread it and dumped it while they were doing all the plantings. And I was like, this is the best bargain.
Yes. We have a plant concierge, a rock concierge.
A bird opera singer outside.
Yes. It's basically like Snow White over here, guys.
Okay, so that sound, I know we don't play it very much, but it means we have a quick tip. And this one is about organization, specifically for anyone looking for tips for organizing your drawers.
Not your underwear.
Right.
Not your drawers.
Your actual drawers in a kitchen or in a pull-out pantry or anywhere else where you contain many items. Because what I was noticing is that in many drawers, to make them the most functional, I have little containers within those drawers. An example would be in a junk drawer. You might have a little container that has paper clips and one with pens, and your scissors are in another compartment. Like, a lot of little dividers. And what I have learned over time is that since drawers move, these little things within the drawers shift around. And it can be super annoying. So this tip is really easy. It's inexpensive. It's just to take a pack of those 3M Velcro command strips. They're usually recommended for hanging pictures.
Yeah, I think we've talked about them on the podcast about getting them to hang pictures or even just to keep pictures straight on a wall so that when you dust, they don't get all janky.
Right. They're just great for adhering things to things, right? So if you have things moving around in your drawers, cut each strip vertically, get two for one, right? If you cut the strip in half, you then get two strips. And I use two strips to adhere each container from the bottom to the bottom of the drawer. It doesn't damage a drawer. I can tell you I've done it for years in some drawers and then removed them to move things around. That's the great thing about the 3M strips. It's not like glue where you can't undo what you've done. They come up cleanly and you can restructure. So if a drawer used to hold three containers and you want to add a fourth, just pull up the old strips and restructure the drawer. So even on drawers like at the beach house, we were having some issues with things shifting around. We have pull-out drawers within our pantry with bins on them where we put our cereal and bags. And it's amazing how in 5 minutes, like a whirlwind, you can run around your kitchen or your craft room or anywhere with these drawers. You can attach the containers within the drawers and then they don't move anymore.
Yeah, if you're someone who gets a lot of satisfaction from having that super organized drawer, again, whether it's a junk drawer or your silverware drawer or even like in your bathroom vanity where you have all of your lotions and makeups and whatever people keep in those drawers, your toothbrushes.
Jen doesn't know because I have like literally zero makeup. I have a little makeup bag in the car, so he's never seen anything in our bathroom.
Whatever a normal human woman keeps in her bathroom vanity. They're great. If you like to keep those organized and looking clean, you can keep everything in its place. And I also like it because if you don't have bins that are perfectly sized to the drawer, like let's say they're a little bit too small, so they're more likely to shift around, you can anchor them and actually create more dividers and more sort of containers within the drawer. Say you've got a really big drawer and you stick a container right in the middle of it. Well, now you've got areas on either side of that container that you can also use to wrangle all of your stuff and keep it all separated. So it's a way to really divide up a large drawer without having to buy an excessive number of little containers or boxes.
Exactly. And I'll actually put links in the show notes to the multi-pack of the 3M that we buy, but I'll also show you some of the containers I love. It can be hard to find shallow enough containers for those shallow drawers. I have some clear containers I really love, and there's some awesome ones. There's even some that are wooden dividers. That's how I create certain places for tools. So I'll link that all in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. It just feels nice to open a drawer and be happy with what's inside instead of being like, oh, I have to clean this drawer again.
Everything's jangling around. Okay, update time. And we actually just have one quick update from last episode when we talked about that backward book trend. You know, that's that thing where people put their books with the spines facing in. So all you see is like the neutral pages. And I guess people use that to make their bookshelves look less chaotic. So we talked about that last episode, but we also put up a poll on Insta Stories so that you guys could weigh in. And Sherry has the results of that poll.
Yes. So it seemed interesting that the poll was not even close. It was 85% one thing. Do you think those 85% of people liked the backwards books or detested the backwards books?
Well, I think we kind of know.
They hated them.
Yes. So 85% of people said nay to the backward book trend.
Right. And 15% said yay. And actually almost 26,000 people weighed in, which is insane. I think we should do these quizzes in Insta Stories every week because it's really fun to get that many people weighing in. I kept waiting to see if it would shift. The interesting thing is it kind of rode that breakup the entire time, that like 85-15 split. When 500 votes were in, it was around 85-15. So it's interesting to see it go up to 26,000 people and still have that same breakdown.
I feel like we need to get someone from that 15% on the podcast to passionately defend the backward books.
Well, I heard some interesting things from people. One person said on the set of TV shows, sometimes they have to do that because of licensing or distraction. Right. Like they don't want you reading the title while they're talking. They don't want a logo on the title to be trademarked and they get in trouble for infringement.
Yeah, that's true.
So that made sense to me. And they also, like, catalogs would probably have to do the same thing. They wouldn't want to put, like, some logo on the side of the book that's not allowed. And then the other thing I heard was someone said she had so many books that were giving her anxiety because she wanted to read all of them. So she turned a bunch backwards and only turned the next three she was going to read forwards. And I thought in that instance, it's interesting because you're basically selecting the next three and focusing on them instead of focusing on everything.
Oh, that actually has a purpose to turn them around. It's almost like keeping track of where you are in your reading list.
Exactly. And I guess someone else said, I have a distinction between decorative books that might be on a mantle and I don't care if those are backwards or forward because the purpose of those is decorative. But the ones on my bookcase obviously are cataloged in a way that I can see the spine and read them. So I thought that was interesting that she divided her books in that way. But it was really fun. I loved the discussion. I loved hearing from you guys about ways in which it worked for you or it didn't. So look for more polls because that was really fun.
We'll just have to come up with more controversial topics to bring up. But next, we wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about a special anniversary that happened recently. You know, we're really big on anniversaries here.
John knows at any point you can just say, hey, what were we doing 3 years ago? And he will figure it out. Like, he has that brain that remembers, like, 3 years ago we were doing blah, blah, blah on spring break.
I'm just wired that way. And yesterday, at least the yesterday of when you guys are listening to this, February 25th, will be the 12-year anniversary of us moving to Richmond.
I know, that is so crazy.
I mean, over a decade now.
I know, because I still feel like I lived in New York longer, but I was in New York for 6 years. So I've lived in Richmond twice as long as I lived in New York City.
Well, and you hear the crazy thing is we also, I think a couple months ago, passed the mark of having lived in this house the longest of any house.
I know. And for so long, you guys who followed along with the blog, everyone was like, the first house was the really long house. It was 4.5 years. Everybody felt this like super devotion to the first house as being like our real house. And it's funny now that we've surpassed that long length with this house easily. Like, we blinked our eyes and we're at almost 5 years.
Yeah, we'll be at 5 years in June. So we're just barely over the 4.5 year mark. So anyways, the reason why we like to think about this anniversary of our move here to Richmond is because that was a really big moment in our lives and like kind of the launch point to everything that has followed in the last 12 years, because we've talked very generally, I think, in passing about that move of how we lived in New York City. We didn't really like living in New York and the rat race and how expensive it was and just was not a good fit for us, especially me. And we decided just to sort of like pull up our roots and start fresh somewhere that was less busy, less expensive, and that ended up being Richmond.
Yeah, and I think when we breeze over it, it sounds like everything fell into place. We landed in Richmond, and it was the easiest transition of our lives. So we thought, well, that's not true. We should probably go back and kind of explain, because I think anyone listening who's having a hard time with various challenges, whether they're relationship-related or job-related or location-related, this has all of those aspects. It's a story of intrigue, of love, of loss.
Well, let's not oversell it a little bit. But as much as it was an exciting time for us when we did that, I think we recognized that it was also a really scary time and also a hard time, especially the events leading up to it. So we wanted to share with you guys three of the sort of hurdles that we had to get through to get to this place where we could move to Richmond and kind of start fresh. They were both individual hurdles and sort of hurdles as a couple. So I'm going to begin, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
So real quick, I ended up in New York City after college because that's the only place I could get a job after I graduated. I had interned there one summer and knew from that internship it was not really the right place for me. I love New York City. It's a great place. It was just not the perfect fit for how I saw my life. But that was the card I was dealt. And so I ended up there. And from day one, I was kind of planning my exit route. I knew I probably should keep my job for about a year or so, just so it was not a blip on my resume. But at that 12-month mark, I kind of wanted out. And I planned my exit strategy to be grad school. I didn't like my job very much, but I did like the advertising industry. So I thought, I'll go back to school. I liked being in school. And so I applied to a graduate program actually here in Richmond in advertising. And that was how I was going to restart my life in a way that was a better fit for me. And I got rejected.
Which is bogus. And I'm John's biggest fan and wife, so I know it might sound like I'm just saying that, but like John's resume, John's portfolio, I don't know how he didn't get
well,
in.
Well, I should clarify that I got rejected from the program that I applied to, and they tried to defer me to a different program that they thought I was a better fit for, which in hindsight, I can recognize they were correct. But that was not what I wanted to hear at the moment. And so I did not accept. And I just kind of resigned myself to like, I guess I'm stuck in New York longer. And I was really upset about it for a while. But the good thing that came out of that was that knowing I was going to live there longer than I had planned forced me to kind of invest myself in the city more. And it's when I actually first opened myself up to having a relationship while I was in the city, because previously I decided I was not going to become attached to anyone. But once I opened myself up, guess who I saw in my sights?
I like tripped into your life.
Right, exactly. My coworker, Sherry.
Why not?
Why not?
And so from my side of things, this is something I've never really talked about, so you guys might all be shocked, but I was actually living with a guy who I was seriously dating. We had an apartment in New York City together, and we lived together for over a year, and even after a month or two, I was like, this just is not right. I don't think he's the person I'm going to marry, but like our families knew each other. We'd seriously dated for a long time. We interwove so much, like our friends were friends, and it just felt like, how am I ever going to extricate myself from this super like involved relationship where I'm living with a person? Like, I know I'm not going to marry him And every day that I'm living with this person, it feels mean to do to him. It feels weird to tell my family everything's fine when I feel like this just isn't it.
Well, I think a lot of people can relate to the fact that it's a lot of times easier to stay in something than to go through the trouble to get yourself out of it. Like whether it's a relationship or a job or whatever.
Right. Living in a place you don't love. Yeah. It's a lot of effort, I think, to extricate yourself from any of those.
The status quo is much easier.
So I basically worked up my courage and I just said to myself, like, I'm starting over. I'm going to have to get my own lease, my own place. It's going to cost me money. It's going to cost me time. It's going to make my life so much more frustrating and less easy than it is right now. But at least morally, I will feel like this is the right choice for me. And taking this big risk hopefully will pay off in a reward that I will end up dating and marrying someone that I feel like is the right person instead of forcing this thing that didn't feel right to me.
And she is still waiting for that day to come. To find that right person.
No, so I broke up with the guy. My family was pissed at me. Like, nothing about this was easy. I spent a lot of money getting my own place. I had to carry boxes myself down the street to my new place to move myself in. Like, it was the hardest thing I've ever gone through alone in New York City, getting a new place. I got locked in the building at one point, which was super annoying. I could not get out.
Only Sherry. Could get herself trapped in an apartment.
Just sobbing, crying because everything was hard and I was alone. And guys, the happiness of the story is that I believe when you take these big risks and you're in free fall, the chances of it being better in hindsight are really good because it felt terrible in the moment. But in hindsight, I realized, well, duh, how am I going to meet the person I love and want to marry if I'm staying with the person I don't? Like, it just was all sorts of complicated in the moment, but obviously I now have a clear view and I know that ending that relationship was what led me to John. And in more ways than one, in a strange turn of events, the only reason I worked at the agency where I met John was because my previous boyfriend, who was also in advertising, put it on my radar. And I like to think that John not getting into grad school is the reason we dated too. So there's like these things that feel like stumbling blocks and they're annoying and they're not how you picture things going. But I guess we're sharing these, even though they're not really house related. It's kind of like last week when I was talking about how the mini fridge wasn't working and we were like, we'd rather not force something.
I love how you're relating our like early struggles as 20-somethings in New York City, like finding happiness in our work and our relationships with a mini fridge.
I just think my life motto is don't settle. Like, I feel that way about, remember the pink chair that we bought for the BHS guys a few weeks ago we were talking about on the podcast?
Oh, now a chair and a mini fridge.
Well, I was just saying, like, if something doesn't work, believe it. Don't force it. Don't try to make it work. If there's some better chair out there or a better fridge solution, like, let's move past it.
Or a better man.
Just different. He was a good man for someone else. True. He's very happy in a relationship. We both realized it never would have worked.
It worked out for everyone in the end.
It was fine. So those are two challenges we had in our life in New York. So that was that 12 years ago about?
Yeah, that was 2004 and 5, so like 13, 14 years ago. And those were things that we had to get through before we, you know, came together as a couple and started dating and started to look at life together forward. Like, what did that look like? And I think for the first few months you were in that, like, you know, new relationship phase and everything seems rosy. And so staying in New York together was like, I think how we probably pictured life for a little while. But it didn't solve my dissatisfaction with New York City and my job. I was really not happy in my work. And so Sherry, who has always in our relationship been the one who is more ready to just pull off the Band-Aid and start new, like, she's the one who, like, pushes me to the edge in a good way.
In a loving way.
Yes, in a loving way. Like, you need to make a decision, and why are you stalling? And I think you kind of said, if you're not happy, let's leave.
I was like, listen, I'm a happy puppy anywhere. I love New York City. I love my job, but not more than I love you. Like, I love you most. I see a future with you. And I don't want you to be sad every day living in this place I like, but you hate. Let's find a place we both like.
Right. And I actually think, oddly enough, it was kind of design TV that helped us take that leap. I remember very distinctly in my apartment on the Upper West Side one day, us watching Small Space, Big Living or something. And you and I both were like, that's so cool that people own these places and they can do with them what they want. Like, they can make them over. And that's something, you know, you can't do in an apartment. Like, you can't do any really big renovations in an apartment. And so that planted the seed for us. Like, we should go to a place where we can buy something and we can put our mark on a home. We initially set our sights on the Washington, D.C. area because that's near where I grew up and I was just familiar with it. And I was like, hey, let's go back there. But that's still a very expensive market. It's still very, you know, dense and urban. And so we didn't think if we went there, we would necessarily be able to buy a house right off the bat. I mean, we're like, what, 23 at this point? 24, right. Maybe. So we then shifted our sights a little bit further south to Richmond because it's a smaller city. It's much more affordable. And we knew if we went there, we could very quickly buy a home.
And the great thing about Richmond is it has this big advertising presence, even more so than DC, where we were looking. Like, there are some agencies here that win Agency of the Year, like big institutions where we knew we could come, interview, and get a job. Or so we thought.
Yes. This comes to the hurdle that we ran into actually trying to get ourselves to Richmond. Once we decided we were coming here, we couldn't get a job.
Right. We wanted people to hire us before we moved so we could tell our families, we're not crazy. We already landed jobs. Isn't that how it's supposed to go?
Well, Practical John, yes, would like to have a job lined up before he quits the other one.
Right. But nobody would do that. Literally everyone was like, we don't want to invest in you and interview you five times and vet you. And then you're like, I'm not in Richmond and I'm never coming. Like, they wanted us to have a Richmond mailing address and then they would talk to us.
Someone rejected you because they said you would be too bored here. And you were like, let me make that decision if I'll be bored.
It was really frustrating. They were like, you used to work on such fun, amazing, big New York clients. You're going to be so bored of these Virginia clients. And I was like, dude, I am choosing this lifestyle. Let me decide.
So we had to eventually just make the decision to take the risk. And we quit our jobs without any jobs lined up and packed up all of our stuff into a minivan because our two apartments could fit in just a Dodge Caravan. And we drove down to Richmond just to see what would happen. And I was sweating it because, again, I am this practical guy who was really nervous about having just made this big leap without a course set out in front of me. And so, again, it was an exciting time, but it was a really scary time. And we got lucky that we very quickly landed on our feet. I was able to get a job within a month of moving here, and Sherry was able to start working freelance, which is actually funny because that's another way that Design TV kind of shaped our early days together.
Yeah, this is a really weird random story that involves an HGTV show. So I landed in Richmond. John got his job at an agency. I was interviewing at agencies, but I was told by a bunch of my New York friends, like, hey, you should be able to freelance right now. You have the portfolio, you have the clients. Because I had clients in New York that I kind of took with me, and I earned some local clients right away that just wanted copywriting work. So I had a pretty full roster, but I was still looking to take on some new jobs. And we had been watching HGTV one day. It was like a weekend sitting on the couch. And this show came on, and it was a really cool loft in California, full of color and bright, interesting visuals. You know, it was like a candy store, basically, for your eyes. And they mentioned that the woman was a product namer. And I thought it would be really fun to name products. And I Googled her. You know, her name was on the show. And I found that she had this little boutique naming agency in San Francisco. And I said, hey, I've done all this agency work. I can do taglines for people. I can help you do brand development stuff. I can help you brainstorm. And she hired me as one of her lead namers. And I went on to name cell phones and cheeseburgers and banks and all these things that people interact with. And I never would have gotten that job if I hadn't been watching HGTV and seeing that woman who I'm still good friends with in San Francisco. It just is like so crazy to me that I had this main client in San Francisco because of HGTV.
Well, and I think had you not had the flexibility of being your own boss and freelancing, we wouldn't have been able to spend as much time on the blog as we did in the early days. And you have that kind of seamless transition from being a copywriter to being a blogger.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I couldn't have spent the time growing the blog and working on posts. We probably always would have just had it as a hobby, but it never would have gotten the attention it needed to become a full-time job eventually.
So again, we know this is a really long detour and backstory about our lives, but again, we were feeling nostalgic because of our anniversary. And like Sherry said, I think we have been talking a lot recently in home decisions about being able to recognize your mistakes or acknowledging the things that aren't working so that you can move past them and get to the things that are working. And so we realized that was actually sort of the headline for our early life together, was like realizing the things that weren't working and being brave enough to move past them, as scary as it was. And
yeah, brave is a weird word because we didn't feel very brave.
I feel very brave, Sherry.
In hindsight, you can say it was bravery, but at the time it felt stupid. It felt risky.
Yeah, it felt a little reckless maybe.
Yes. But I guess what I would encourage people is that sometimes in order to move past a mistake and get on with your life or anything, your career or your love, you kind of have to like start all over again. You have to lose what you have and let go of what you have to get to the next phase, you know, to discover what's out there beyond that.
Even if it's just letting go of a mini fridge so that you can get more counter space. Full circle, guys.
The most exciting change at the beach house has been more counter space, you guys.
Getting rid of one pink chair so you can get another pink chair.
And possibly return the second pink chair. We're not sure about it.
It would be brave of us. And if you're curious, in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast, I will put some photos. I think we even have video of our old apartments in New York and our first apartment here in Richmond. So you can see how
interesting our style was.
Yes. What 2005, 2006 John and Sherry living looked like.
And up next, I am going to share what I'm digging, and I might dig it the most of anything I've ever dug. I am in love with this thing. It makes me laugh out loud. It makes me cry. John has watched the many emotions pour out of me.
Oh my gosh. If I thought crystals deserved an eye roll.
But first, we have to take a quick break.
I'd say by this point in our DIY journey, if you want to call it that, we could probably paint a room in our sleep.
I mean, there might be a few drips if we were actively sleeping, but there are still a lot of people that we hear from who are nervous to paint.
Yeah, so we thought we'd ask an expert for some pro tips. We were talking to Jeff Given. He's the president of this week's sponsor, Handy Paint Products. He has 2 decades of painting practice behind him, and all the products that Handy make, you know, those little red cups, are about making painting jobs easier.
Yeah, so John asked Jeff this question.
Like, what would be your top tip for someone who's either new at painting or just kind of nervous about doing it?
Take your time, throw some music on, put a podcast on. If you rush through the project, it's going to cause a lot more mistakes than if you take your time.
What's your favorite song or album to listen to while you paint?
I throw some old school reggae on because it's quite calming to me.
That's so funny because then your pace is like slow like reggae.
Well, it's like you're painting, but you're kind of half on an island somewhere.
Right. It's like
that's right.
You're painting, but you're pretending you're in the Caribbean.
Your mind's somewhere else.
So before your next, or maybe your first paint project, cue up the playlist.
I also appreciated Jeff's podcast plug.
Yeah, or listen to a podcast. And be sure to pick up some Handy paint products. We especially love the paint cup with the magnet and the super sturdy roller tray. You can find them and all of the other red Handy paint products wherever you buy paint.
I know Sherry left you guys in a lot of suspense about what she's digging this week, but I'm going to do mine first because it's quick. Okay, what I'm digging this week is just a simple tool that I highly recommend everyone have on hand if you don't already. We did a post several years ago about the 5 tools that changed the way we DIY, you know, things that were just like essential tools that helped us up our game. And this was on the list, and it is a cordless electric drill driver. So, you know, a screwdriver, or you can switch it out, it can be a drill. And the one that I have that I really like, I've had it for about 4 years now, is a Ryobi One Plus 18 volt power drill driver. And obviously one reason I like it is because I have a lot of tools in the Ryobi system that I've purchased over the years. And so they have interchangeable 18 volt batteries, so I can mix and match between my different tools. So that's the reason this particular one has been a really great fit for me. And it also has like little things like a magnetic platform on the base so that you can store different drill heads or different screws so they don't get lost. It also has a little light that when you press it, it lights up the area that you're drilling towards. So I just highly recommend if you don't have something like this, that you pick one up because they come in handy all the time. I use it almost daily, I feel like sometimes.
Yeah, we used it last night. We went to a party and brought the drill because a friend asked us to help them take a thing off the wall.
Yeah, and I realized probably a lot of the DIYers out here, they're like, well, duh, of course I have a power drill. Like, that's like basics. But like, our friends didn't have one and they were taking something off the wall with like their manual screwdriver. And I was like, here, in 2 seconds, I can have that out for you. And it's not too big, so you can easily store it like in a drawer or in a cabinet somewhere to grab really quickly. I'll put links to the ones that I have in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast because there are a few of them. And depending on where you buy them and if you buy them with a battery or not, it changes the price. But without a battery, you can get it for about $40, $45. And with the battery, I think it's like $99. So it's not terribly expensive either. And so this is just my call to everyone out there that if you don't have a power drill driver, get one. And I also will put a link to a little drill driver set that's like $7 that you should get also that has a bunch of different heads and different size drill bits so that if you are hanging a picture and need to put an anchor on the wall or whatever, you've got everything right there. So I keep those 2 things handy all the time.
And now for the moment you've been waiting for.
Dun, da, da, da.
Guys, I am dating. It's not a trilogy.
You're dating.
I'm dating. I'm digging. I am actually dating the characters in this book. Okay, so it's a series. There's 5 books, and it's by Harper Teen, so it's young adult. But I'm telling you, if you pick up these books, you will not put them down. So the first one, I stayed up till 12:30 last night reading it to finish it. It's called The Selection, and they're by a woman named Kira Cass. It's a New York Times #1 bestseller, you guys. So the YA crowd knows what's up. I would liken this sort of to Hunger Games.
I was going to say, is this like a new Twilight?
Okay, so this is a really weird description, but to me, it's The Bachelor meets The Hunger Games, because the setup is that it's these girls who are courting the prince, but there's multiple girls and just one prince. So it's very much like The Bachelor, the struggles of the, like, I'm not the only one he's talking to, blah, 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 insecurities. But there's also this hierarchy of, you know, the royals and them getting attacked. There's the working class versus the really elite classes who don't get their hands dirty.
There's like the District 12 and then there's the Capitol.
It's exactly like that. They have a caste system. I can't explain it, but it's romantic. It's funny. I was laughing out loud. You saw me last night. I gasped like,
yes,
I was watching a soap opera.
I was like falling asleep and then Sherry goes, Aspen showed up. I was like, what the heck is an Aspen?
These are the characters. Her name is America Singer and she's a singer. Aspen is the first love boy who's just like a commoner. It's fantastic. They live in Alia, which is a kingdom, because the United States somehow got overtaken by China. This is set in the future and it becomes the United States of China.
Oh my gosh.
I'm doing it no justice. It sounds cheesy and terrible when in fact it is wonderful. And just like The Hunger Games, it's full of intrigue and mystery and there's fear and there's classism. There's like social commentary, but in a teen form that I eat like a sugary cupcake.
I would like to point out Sherry's almost 36. She'll be 36 next month. Okay.
Congratulations to Harper Teen. It's a masterpiece. Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
And guys, I'm back to my old tricks this week, and I'm going to ask you to please take a moment to rate or review us in Apple Podcasts. I know there are some new listeners out there who've just found us this year, so it would be a huge help if you took a moment to write a review if you're enjoying the show. Just find us in your podcast app library and scroll down until you see the stars. It only takes a couple of clicks, and then you're done.
And keep telling us what you do while you listen. Like Erin on Instagram, this story is a personal favorite of mine. She was so distracted by her podcast while she was at the gym that she walked into the wrong locker room.
Ooh, that is uncomfortable. And of course, head over to younghouselove.com/podcast for this week's show notes, including videos of our old New York City apartments and a sneak peek of our backyard landscaping.
And a link to those 5 books I'm obsessed with. You can thank me later. Who will he pick, you guys? And what will happen to Miss America Singer?
Later.
Bye.
No.
Sorry.
Just trying to get 10 seconds of silence.
Just rounding it out with another sneeze. And we're a go for another sneeze in 3, 2, 1.